back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and with me is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the second part of our weekly Q&A with Layla, where we answer your questions. And so, take it away, Layla.
Okay, our next writer is Susan. She emailed us. I have collected podcasts for many years. This means I've gradually added many supplements after Dr. Hoffman's interviews. Never against giving something a try, though now I feel like Chicken Little. Getting ready for an upcoming trip meant a large jar full of pills, perhaps too many. She wants to know, are these things still worth taking? And let me go through them. And Whoa. She has a follow-up comment. Grapeseed extract, K2, lycopene, lysine, fish oil, chiolic. She goes on and on.
Right. So, yeah, don't tell me everything. Because what that is you just described the nature of a fairly typical appointment. It's like, here's all my vitamins.
Right.
Should I be taking these things?
Yeah. And so she's a 70-year-old female with no known health issues, following a low-carb diet. She says, I was impressed by Dr. Atkins from day one. As another listener mentioned, I like to go to sleep with you, and Dr. Hoffman. I think of you as sort of an audio family.
That's a little scary.
I have two older iPods full of broadcasts, as well as a new one with your website and your podcast. P.S. My husband is a physician and thinks supplements are silly, so I add D2 to his salad. I wonder if that's in the form of mushrooms.
Well, I'm not sure whether... adding D2 to his salad, is that like
Shiitakes?
A form of like get back or revenge? Because we know that that's the inferior form of vitamin D.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not sure whether she misspoke and said D2 or whether she's actually trying to exact revenge on her skeptical husband by giving him a not as good form of vitamin D. It's a cute letter, and let me just tell you how I approach this. I'm not going to go through each and every one of the things that she's taking because I don't know her situation.
Yes.
So, you know, it's all these things are plausible. They all could make sense for one person or another. But we would like to match the supplement recommendations to the person's age, sex, disease state, genetic predisposition, height, weight, blood test characteristics, and so on. So we want to individualize our recommendations. But when I see a patient who has a big list of supplements and they wave it at me and they say, I'm taking these 30 different things, what should I do? Here's how I chunk it. I break it down into three categories. Well, one is I quickly scan it for things that no way, no how should you take.
Mm-hmm.
Like things that I think are really bogus supplements, worthless, or even worse, harmful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess those are two categories there. One is like, don't waste your time, it's a waste of money. But also, there could be something that's potentially harmful. There are not that many harmful things on the market, but you know, they're potentially harmful things. So that's one category. It's like, no way, no how, don't take these things, get rid of them right away. Then we get to the next two categories. One is, yes, this is really good, and this is exactly what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And the other category is like, okay, you know, you could take this, but, you know, I'm not sure that that's absolutely necessary, but it's plausible, there's nothing wrong with it, and you could take it. So based on that, we come up with, we sort of try and come up with a consensus of, here's the really things you need. And then there's some things that you might take as an add-on, you know, like additional lycopene. I mean, is lycopene absolutely essential? Probably not, unless you were talking about a man who's very predisposed to prostate cancer. There it could be very, very important. But for an ordinary person taking extra lycopene, I don't know, probably okay, good, you know, might be helpful, might ward off cancer, even in a woman. Is it de rigueur? Is it essential? It wouldn't hurt.
Right. It wouldn't hurt. Absolutely.
So that's a way of handling. I mean, you know, sorry we're not going to go into a detailed analysis of that question.
And Susan, don't add D2 to a salad. Make it D3.
Yeah, unless if you don't like your husband, then add D2.
Okay. Our next one is from Patricia.
But it's really interesting. I'm sorry, going back to that. Mm-hmm. What an interesting disparity is that the wife is totally into supplements and even sleeps with me at night.
Mm-hmm.
while her husband is totally against it. I mean, the I almost feel like something illicit going on between me and this listener.
Yeah,
you know, and her husband is somehow being spurned.
Right. Well, this is from Patricia, Dr. Hoffman. I'm a 78-year-old... Oh, this is actually from Bob. Patricia writes in, it's for Bob. I'm a 78-year-old man in great health. My weight is excellent, and I exercise. I run on a regular schedule. My problem
is... How old is it?
He's 78.
78, and he runs on a regular schedule?
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I run on a regular... That's wonderful.
Fantastic.
Yeah. My problem is waking up after 4 hours and not being able to fall back to sleep. What causes this problem... And how can I solve it? There is, Bob, there is the issue of many people will wake up after 4 hours of sleep, maybe stay up for a while, and then go to what's called the second sleep.
Right.
It's hypothesized now that we may have two sleeps.
Right.
The first 4 hours and the next 4 hours. And there could be a time span of as much as 2 hours between those sleeps.
Well, this is very interesting. That is sort of the definition of paleo sleep. You know, we talk about the paleo diet, and we talk about paleo exercise and paleo running and so on. It may be humans' natural lot, especially in the wintertime, where there's not a lot of daylight. You know, when the lights go out, people, you know, just kind of cool it and chill. They didn't like, you know, have like illuminated flashlights to walk around in their natural habitat. So they just kind of hunker down in their nests or their caves.
When it's as black as pitch, there's nothing else to do.
Right. And they would then maybe sit by, you know, after the advent of fire, maybe a million years ago, they would sit around by the campfire and warm themselves and maybe, you know, tell stories and maybe, you know, make love and sleep a little bit. And then wake up to maybe tell some more stories and then sleep a little bit longer, because the night that's like 14 hours long or 16 hours long, you know, you don't need to sleep that entire time. So it's actually, this is thought to be maybe the way that people were designed to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there are some people who have a terrible problem getting much sleep. And it's, you know, as you get older, sometimes your sleep mechanism breaks down. You know,
yes.
Just it's like a breakdown of any body part. Your sleep robustness declines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd think it would be the opposite. You'd think that, like, if you're older, you know, you just want to sleep all the time. But no.
Because you slow down, you think there's more sleep, but there isn't.
But
it's the opposite.
It's, sleep is a very active metabolic phase. It requires a lot of energy production in the brain. And sometimes it's a sign of decline. Sometimes it's a sign of hormone decline.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look to this gentleman, if he were to become a patient, at testosterone levels. Testosterone is really great for deepening sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Estrogen does the same in women. DHEA does that to some extent in both sexes. You, from your standpoint, blood sugar, right?
I mean, blood sugar, absolutely. If you're waking up in the middle of the night for no seemingly good reason, it could be that you have some unstable blood sugar in the middle of the night, or low blood sugar in the middle of the night. So the remedy for that is to have a protein fat snack, either maybe a couple of hours before bedtime. Make sure that most of your meals are pretty well planned that way. Less carbohydrate, more fats and protein. But the other thing is, you know, every night when we go to sleep, we go into a little hibernation. And what that means is our core temperature lowers to some extent, just like bears go into hibernation in the winter. And what we need to do, number one, is make sure that our bedroom is not too warm. It should feel like a cave, somewhere between 60 and 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Is the optimal temperature for sleeping. This is all about a little sleep hygiene here, folks. That, make sure you're not wearing too many
clothes. The science of sleep.
You have to make sure that it's cool enough, because if it's not cool enough, your core temperature is not going to stay low enough for you to stay asleep. So that would be one of the first things I would look at. The second thing is, make sure there's no light coming in. Your clock radio should not be blinking at you. Nothing should be blinking at you in your bedroom. Make sure there's not even moonlight coming through the window. Get blackout
shades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of that. And if that's still not working, we love Glycom.
Glycom
is a wonderful supplement, which is actually the amino acid glycine. Glycine is made in our bodies in small amounts, and what glycine does is it helps to lower your core temperature while you sleep, to keep you staying asleep.
Right.
So this wonderful amino acid can help you with that.
It is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. And so I think the Japanese originally did the research on this, but it's being picked up by other companies. So glycine in various forms is being used. And the product we use is called Glysom, mm-hmm. made by a Japanese company. And, you know, it doesn't work all the time. But what it for about 40% of people, it clicks.
Yes.
And it actually works better for the people who fall asleep but wake up in the middle of the night.
Right.
So it meets a need. We can knock people out to make them fall asleep.
Yeah.
You know, we give them melatonin. We can give them other... We have a product called Insomnitrol, which is a mixture of 5-HT and passion flower and, you know,
lemon
all these
bomb,
valerian, all these naturally sedating things. And it knocks you out and you go to sleep. But some people say, look, I fall asleep fine, but I wake up with a start, you know, in the middle of the night, and I can't get back to sleep. And that's what the Glysom seems to help with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the time to take the Glysom, Bob, is at bedtime, not in the middle of the night when you've woken up, but at bedtime.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure that out. We got an email. Did you see the email? I don't know if you saw it, but there was an email from, I'm not sure if it was a patient or a listener, who took the Glysom, and they said, remarkable. It really made a difference for them. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, you solved my sleep problem. And it can be a home run, or it can be, you know, not effective.
That's true. If you're finding in the beginning that it's not effective, it's perfectly safe to double up on the dose.
Right.
At bedtime.
And it might
it's
work
perfectly
at
fine.
That. Okay.
Okay. Our next question. This is from Philip. What supplements would you recommend before entering the hospital to help healing after an operation? I think the time to... Well, first of all, if you're going...
Well, he's not specifying what type of operation.
No, he's not.
You know,
You want to make sure your immune system is in the best of health before entering a hospital, that you've been well-fed, you're well-nourished, all of those good things. But I think post-op is probably more of concern.
Well, we have that section on our website, Supplements for Surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into detail, Philip, on what supplements to take before and after. And it also, I mean, we keep getting this question, but we can reiterate what are some things to avoid. We want to tell people to take less fish oil because of the risk of bleeding, although fish oil is actually helpful for recovery. We want to tell people to stop ginkgo and garlic preparations and high-dose vitamin E.
Mm-hmm.
We do want patients to take adequate vitamin C and zinc for repair, and we want them to take vitamin D.
And magnesium.
And magnesium. Magnesium is often depleted by surgery, so that's really important. And so in general, I mean, and it also depends on the type of surgery.
That's true.
I mean, if you're going to get surgery where it might affect your heart or your brain, we would want patients to take coenzyme Q10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see here. We have another patient, somebody who's written in, who had a triglyceride level.
This is great. You know, if you're a patient, you don't even need to come in or pay us. Just so it's like, you know, just send us a question, and then we'll read you an answer on the podcast. It's a new form of medicine. It's like... This is called Hoffmanocare.
Uh-huh.
It's not Obamacare. It's Hoffmanocare.
Yeah. This is...
It's great because it's like free.
There you go. 46-year-old male with triglyceride levels at 1,100.
Okay. Whoa, triglycerides 1,100?
Right.
Do you know what that looks like when you draw the blood of a patient who has triglycerides of 1,100? I've seen it. It's amazing.
Milkshake.
Instead of, you know, everybody knows what blood looks like. It looks sort of like dark red or, you know, almost purplish in color. And that blood looks like, it looks like cream of tomato soup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sort of light red, almost pinkish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very thick, you know, sort of like a strawberry milkshake.
Yeah.
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 Wow, it's full of fat.
Yeah.
It's full of fat.
Well, interestingly, and this comes to us from Felicia, he's on krill oil, about 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day. He says he's been on it for about 6 months, but his levels are still over 1,100.
That's because krill oil doesn't work.
Yeah.
There aren't many studies,
yeah, right?
Yeah, no, but krill oil is a poor delivery system for the amount of omega-3 that you need to lower triglycerides. So what you need is, and you need a good pill like the Orthomega pill that we use, as 1,200 milligrams of omega-3, that where you probably take 6, maybe even 9 of those a day. And that is the level that's required to lower triglycerides.
Yeah.
That it will lower triglycerides. In fact, the drug
Lovaza
that is prescribed in cardiologist's office, it's actually, the FDA does not allow a claim for, there's a qualified claim for reducing cardiovascular disease. It's not even really, it's sort of like, yeah, well, maybe, it's sort of, yeah, but we're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the, its main raison d'etre, reason for being, is to lower triglycerides when given in pretty high doses. 6 a day is the recommended amount of Lovaza, which is a concentrated fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
Krill oil can't you know, go toe-to-toe with that.
Well, the other thing I would say for this 46-year-old male is don't expect to take your krill oil or fish oil and continue eating cheeseburgers, french fries, and pizza and so forth.
Or drink a lot of fruit juice.
Alcohol. Too much alcohol will raise triglycerides.
Well, you make it sound that if you were a vegetarian that you could lower your triglycerides.
Yeah,
so that's not it. If you're eating a high glycemic index diet with a lot of refined carbohydrates, and even like juicing, like, oh, I have my nice tall glass of fresh squeezed orange juice in the morning, or my smoothie made with fruit juice, that could stoke your triglycerides.
That's true. You know, a lot of people don't realize that triglycerides tend to go up in the summertime. Why?
Yep.
Those delicious summer fruits.
Exactly.
We're eating way more fruit in the summertime, so the triglycerides go up.
We see that again and again.
Our livers are directed to make more triglycerides in direct response to too many carbohydrates in the diet. The first order of business, besides a good quality fish oil in the doses that you're recommending, is a lower carbohydrate diet.
Yes.
The diet needs to be assessed and changed.
And the other thing, there is some evidence that aerobic exercise also helps to improve triglyceride tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's interesting, you can actually do a triglyceride tolerance test, just like we do a glucose tolerance test. You can feed people something, and you can see if the triglycerides are, you know, are made. Generally, it doesn't matter whether you are fasting or not when you take a blood test, but when it comes to measuring triglycerides, it's actually preferable. If people have a triglyceride issue, it's preferable to do it fasting to see what the triglycerides really are.
Right, that's true.
All right, well, that's all the questions that we have for this week's edition of Intelligent Medicine. And what did you write in the newsletter this week?
I wrote about your frequently asked questions about supplements. All of your frequently asked questions. How to take them, what to take, what to do if you have, just how to do it properly.
Great. Well, so subscribe to the newsletter and you'll get weekly installments written by yours truly and Layla. And other luminaries in the field of complementary alternative medicine. We will sometimes have guest contributors, especially on our website at drhoffman.com. Most of our articles are republished at drhoffman.com, so check out our website. And we've also got great podcasts there. This week, Natural Therapies for Acne is the subject of our podcast, as well as my newsletter article. So enjoy the content, and those of you who are sleeping with me every night, have a great night. Most of whom are in the neighborhood of, what are the demographics there? Probably generally from the age of about 68 to 75. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.